Hi, I'm Chelsea. I'm from the University of Wisconsin, so we're going to be talking about milk production, obviously. But I think it's applicable to other grazing regimes as well. So, talking about some research we did on organic dairies. The industry is now a billion-dollar industry and expanding over 4% annually for the last 5 years or so. So obviously there's a lot of new farms transitioning to organic, and there's concerns that pasture productivity is not being maximized to meet the growing milk demand. And there's been little research actually on farms looking at these concerns. So we're hoping to look at factors associated with the potential milk production, plant, soil, and management factors. These three typically aren't looked at all at once and are normally looked at in terms of just pasture productivity, not milk production. So this will really give producers a useful tool. And like I mentioned, this study is really extension-driven. We're hoping to give producers a prioritized list. They have limited time and money to be managing their farms. So we looked at 20 farms, 10 each year in 2013 and 2014, two distinct regions of Wisconsin, different climate and different soil types. We visited each farm within 3 days of a grazing event to get the most accurate representation of what the animals are eating in both June and September, again, for different changes throughout the season. On each farm, we had producers pick two paddocks, one that they were happy with the production level and one where they were not as happy with the production level. So that gives us 40 paddocks that we looked at. So for the plant measurements that we looked at, we looked at biomass along transects using a rising plate meter. We looked at species composition, and we ended up putting them in these cover classes due to just the large variety. Improved species would be species that were intentionally planted, for example, meadow fescue, orchard grass. Improved legumes would be red clover and alfalfa. Weeds, unimproved grasses would be Kentucky bluegrass, quackgrass, and unimproved legumes would be black medic, Dutch white clover, things like that. We also took samples for nutritive value using NIRS. For the soil measurements, we did soil samples along those same transects in October to look at soil fertility. We also used NRCS for some other soil type information, and we ran the Solvita test kit on the soil as well. And then lastly, we talked to producers to get a sense of their management over the last 5 or so years. They're based in these three categories: pasture inputs and renovations. Do you fertilize beyond animal deposition? Do you renovate your pastures? Pasture management, average residual height, turn-in height, things like that. And lastly, animal management, stocking rate, are the animals closed into the paddock, things like that. So here's just the range of what we saw. I really just want you guys to notice the large range. You don't need to take the outcome isn't every single number on here. But you can see if you look at the average values, they're within recommended ranges. 30% cover of improved legumes is pretty good, but you can see that they widely varied from zero improved legumes to 100% improved legumes. So the producers can learn a lot from each other. For soil management, you'll see the average value and then the percent of the paddocks below the recommended range. So I'll just point out that there was a lot of deficiencies in micronutrients on the farms that we looked at and on the macronutrient sulfur. So we found this really interesting, and we thought that it would show up as being important for milk production. And then just to get an idea of the grazing management, on average, producers had 11 years of experience with managed intensive rotational grazing, but it ranged anywhere from 2 to 6. They all varied greatly, kind of similar to the plant management. On average, between 5 and 6 grazing events per year, but again, from 3 to 17, those grazing events look very different in those scenarios. So we wanted to look at milk production, though. So we used a milk model to take into account the biomass measurements that we took, and the forage quality measurements that we took, same approach that Brink took in 2008 to get a value for kilograms of 3.5% fat-corrected milk per hectare of pasture for all of those paddocks that we looked at. And this is what we're trying to optimize in this research. So the coolest thing about this project, I think, is the regression tree analysis. It allows you to use categorical and numerical data that's not normal, so we can look at all these plant, soil, and management factors at once, which isn't normally possible. It chooses predictor variables like certain nutrients or plant species cover to minimize the variability in potential milk production. So as you'll see when I go to the results, it splits the data into two mutually exclusive groups again and again based on that milk production value. And it's been previously used with a lot of ecological and environmental data in invasive species invasion and soybean yield. So I'll start with our June results. The factor that explained the most variability in our milk production was improved legume cover. Explained 37% of the variability. It also chose that 41% value. So pastures with over 41% cover of improved legumes on average had around 2,500 potential kilograms of milk per hectare, compared to pastures with less than 40% improved legume cover had almost 1,000 kilograms less. So that's a big value for one grazing event that producers can look at. So as we continue to the next stage in the tree, for producers with over 40% cover of legumes, unimproved grass cover became important. Having less than 70% cover continued to increase that average potential milk production versus having more than 72% cover. This isn't too surprising. Unimproved grasses, lower productivity, higher NDF values. If paddocks had less than 40% cover of legumes, average residual height throughout the year became important. Leaving 8.25 centimeters led to more milk production than if they on average left less than 8.25 centimeters. Average residual height important for maintaining carbohydrate reserves and maximizing that quantity and quality balance in dairy systems. These explained around 9 to 10% of the variability. And our last stage of factors, on the productive side, you can see pasture slope. Having a slope less than 6.5% led to more potential milk production. And then for both average residual heights, unimproved legume cover became important. I'll move on to, and those explained 9 and 5% of the variability. I'll move on to September. The factor that explained the most variability was the amount of experience the producers had with managed intensive rotational grazing. So if you remember from that slide before, it was between 2 and 26 years. Producers with over 21 years of experience had over 1,000 pounds of milk more in September. My colleagues really liked this result because in Wisconsin, in June, it's ideal growing conditions for pastures. You kind of get a fresh start after the winter, and September takes into account, you know, any weather or farm circumstances that came up. So it really shows that experience is beneficial. Producers with more experience, and again, pasture slope comes out less than 8%, you are getting more milk production. Producers with less than 20 years of experience, unimproved grass cover came out as important, explaining 10% of the variability. Again, we get that number around 70%. If you can keep that cover less than 70%, you're getting more milk production, and you're getting closer kind of back to the more productive side of the tree. And then the last factor that came out was end of the year residual. So how much forage are you leaving before you stop grazing for the season? And if you left around 9.5 centimeters, you were getting almost 500 kilograms per hectare more. So, and that explained 5% of the variability. So we see a few things showing out in both timings. We see improved legumes are important. There's obviously a lot of literature on the importance of legumes, but this pulls out improved legumes. Breeders have been working on legumes to increase, you know, their quality and their amount of nitrogen fixed. So we see the separation between unimproved and improved. Also, unimproved legumes like Dutch white clover are often common in overgrazed systems. We see residual height showing up as important both throughout the year and at the end of the year, and we saw leaving 8 to 10 centimeters allows you to produce more than almost 500 kilograms per hectare more in June and September. And then lastly, we see that unimproved grasses reduce production. We don't need to completely eradicate the unimproved species, however. Just keep them below 70%. That probably helps with legume establishment, since unimproved species like Kentucky bluegrass can form a sod that makes it more difficult. Questions? Yes.
Did you look at was there a difference between the two regions? Is there rather the same?
We did look at some regional differences. Most of the soils are still silt loams, but mostly they had pretty similar results. Right. Obviously, no soil fertility issues came up. Oh, sorry. Did we look at some of the soil fertility deficiencies, and did that correlate with any species cover? Obviously, you know, in improved legume cover, there's some other things involved in that. Are the species, you know, seeded or available, as well as is there enough soil fertility for them to be establishing? But we didn't look at that directly. But I think it shows that management is key in these, regionally at least. On farms, it could be very different, but yeah. Yes?
I understand your regression tree. First, you had to have over 41% on the June 1
right.
of improved lighting, and then less than 72% of unimproved grasses. And those two numbers add up to over 100. So is that out of all your grasses? Less than 72% unimproved, or how do you end up with
it? Right. So how we get cover, you can hit multiple species at one point just because of the different canopy layers of pasture. So that's how we calculated cover, at least. Good question.
Still time for questions. Way in the back there.
Right. So the question was, pasture slope came out as important. Was that correlated with anything else? And I think from my experience, yeah, most of the times I don't think they were going to be drill seeding on such high slopes, and it's probably, you know, inherently has less water holding capacity in a lot of those situations. A lot of the pastures with those high slopes, I think, were what the producers would classify as their more unproductive pastures.
I have a quick question, and so I need a quick answer.
Okay.
And that is now you mentioned that this is for extension, at least that was the motivation, but how would you deliver this to an extension audience?
Yeah, most of my presentations have actually been kind of an extension audience, so I was a little nervous to do this one today. But we started kind of by just doing it as a list instead of the regression tree. But I think, They understand the tree. They're really interested. At least all the producers that I went to wanted to know how they compared to other pastures. So I think developing a tool from this would be really useful in the future.
Quick question. Quick.
Yeah. I'm interested in the micronutrient deficiencies and the sulfur, given the amount of manure that's going back on these paddocks. Was that determined by soil tests, or was that with plant tissue analysis?
The question is on the sulfur deficiencies. It was all through soil testing, so there was no micronutrient testing in the forage.
Okay.